So today on the podcast, we have Barbara Tanze, who is a breathing expert. Barbara, welcome. Thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me and letting me talk about this because I'm so passionate about breathing.
You have had an extensive background in the performing arts, but also in vocal health and manual therapy, and you're an expert in breathing. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got started and what your background is?
So first, I studied opera. So I got a Master of Arts in operatic performance and also in vocal pedagogy, because at the time, even though I was actually thinking I was going to be a singer and not teach at all, I felt it was kind of a safe bet to do a Master's of Arts in pedagogy as well, because, you know, I figured as a singer, nobody's ever going to ask you what kind of diploma you have, what kind of degree you have. But if you want to go into teaching and if you want to teach in specific institutions, this is when, you know, a paper is really important. And so I'm actually now really, really glad that I did that MA, because it has opened me also a different world and other possibilities than I would have had maybe if I had only studied vocal performance. And I was basically singing, going through what you would say the first stages of an operatic career. And then like so many others, I ran into some issues. I ran into some physical issues. I was always a very natural singer, and all of a sudden things didn't work as well anymore. Once I hit the 30, you know, regeneration didn't happen as quickly. My voice kind of started to show me certain limits, and especially was starting to show me where my tensions and my breathing limitations really made it impossible to create an effortless sound. So I was working way too hard. And I was very, very happy at the time to know Robin DeHaas and kind of get into the whole breathing coordination method, because it taught me a lot of things about the breath, or it was like my gateway into the breathing. And I did two levels of training with them and then kind of spread my wings and went into a lot of different fields of breathing as well. So I worked with Rob Wilson and Brian McKenzie of The Art of Breath. I have done some fundamental training in Wim Hof. I have done a lot of reading about the oxygen advantage. So like I really got into a lot of the things that are out there, not only for singers, but also for athletes, because I'm doing triathlons. I wouldn't consider myself a real triathlete because I'm very, very slow, but I do it for just my own personal joy. If anything, I'm probably more a swimmer. And so I got very interested in that kind of aspect as well, the athletic aspect of breathing and the efficiency of breathing and, you know, the nose versus mouth and really like how can we educate athletes and singers about how to understand their breathing mechanism in the best possible way so that they can partner up with it and really create that collaboration, you know, between your mind and your body to just get the most out of your body, but with the least kind of toll. And it's been 10 years now that I've been in that, and it's been quite a ride, and I think it's going to be quite a ride because the whole thing is, like I said before, so complex that I don't know if I'm ever going to see the end of it. So it's just very exciting.
And many of my listeners have asked me to do an episode on breathing. I get questions about breathing a lot as a singing teacher, but also on my Instagram stories. And I thought we should have somebody in that really understands breathing from a mechanical aspect, anatomically, that works with both singers and athletes. So you want to be known as the balloon lady. Very often in your content, using balloons to help us understand the mechanics of breath and voice. Can you elaborate on that a bit?
Yeah. So first of all, that's absolutely no pressure. I mean, it's more that I have been really interested in this for the last 10 plus years. And so I might have a couple of answers, but of course the whole thing is very, very complex and I don't think I will ever see the end of it till the end of my life. So I would say about six years ago, I started to use just very, very simple balloons to kind of at least create a little bit of a visualization of what is happening inside the body. It's one of those things that is one of those kind of myths or like mythical creatures in singing, isn't it? This kind of appoggio or breath support, or like, what is it and what's happening and how can we master it? How can we figure it out? And I found balloons to be a wonderful way to illustrate that and to create some sensory feedback of what is happening inside our body with different pressures. And so, yeah, that's why I'm kind of like a crazy balloon lady.
That's so awesome. It's so helpful to have a visual. I loved how you said the other day in a post, breathing issues are as complex as the humans who suffer from them. Can you educate us a bit on the concept of dysfunctional breathing patterns?
Yeah. So it's a little bit like, you know, every person is different. And every person has, let's think about posture, for example, right? Mm-hmm. None of us is perfectly symmetrical. Yeah. None of us has perfect posture. That doesn't mean that we all suffer from something, right? But we could say that probably all of us are slightly dysfunctional when it comes to posture, when it comes to alignment, you know, not big fan of that word posture, but with breathing, it's the same thing, you know, breathing comes from the same kind of general area. And that means that our bodies will, of course, breathe the way that they can, depending on what kind of conditions this body is in. And so we are all going to, in some way or another, just kind of be confronted with a breathing dysfunction. It can be a temporary one, you know, when we have a real flu or, you know, any kind of respiratory disease. It can be while we're doing some sports and we kind of really feel all of a sudden that we can't breathe anymore. It can be also, of course, when we're singing, we can realize that our breathing just doesn't serve us as well as we would like. And it's a big word, like breathing dysfunctions can be a big word and suffering can be a big word as well. And I mean, as an Instagram post, it was also supposed to kind of like trigger people to read that a little bit. Of course, it doesn't mean that everybody is suffering terribly, right? Mm-hmm. Or has dysfunctions that makes it impossible to sing normally or to breathe normally or live normally. But when we get into those very, very specialized fields where we need our breath to be in a certain state in order to serve us, in order to, you know, really kind of be the base of our skills, which is true for singing and it's true for sports. And then again, you can kind of like fan it out and say that it's true for the entirety of our life. But let's just take those two fields, singing and athletics or just sports. This just means that if there's a dysfunction in our everyday breathing, then very probably in those two fields, once we are starting to dive into that, just being so in those fields that are very, very much connected with breathing, we are going to feel those dysfunctions much more than if we were just sitting at a desk or just sitting on our couch the whole day. And so then once we start to realize that there is maybe something that is limiting us, then we need to start to find a strategy or like a strategy on how to improve, on how to understand that thing better. And yeah, and that this is where it becomes really, really complex because every single person has different little dysfunctions or different circumstances that make that there are some limitations. And so it's kind of a detective work trying to find out why that is and how we can improve it and how we can really make it work for that individual.
I'm wondering if you can maybe give us some myths around breathing and what we should start to focus on and what we can highlight in our studios and working with singers.
Yeah, so it's interesting, isn't it? Like very often when we do breathing exercises in the vocal studio, or if it, I think it depends also a little bit what kind of teacher we're working with. You know, I think that you and I were both classically trained, and this meant that usually those teachers, they didn't have a method or something. They just kind of learned something from their professors and took it on as their own, and then they just passed it on. And what I think is becoming more and more evident is that we need to really work with the individual that's in front of us. And some people will not need us to really emphasize breathing because their breathing is fine. And it means that for them, it's enough to just have a very clear concept of what they want from their body in case, you know, there's something that, you know, our body's different every day. In case that there's something that all of a sudden doesn't work, that they know how to return to that state where they are just fine. And maybe they are just naturally fine, naturally well coordinated. And then there are other people who will need a little bit more in-depth understanding because, as I was saying before, there is some sort of a limitation in their everyday breathing that then really comes out when they start to sing or when they start to do sports. And so here then, of course, you know, what's really important, and I really suggest to every singing teacher to have, is a clear concept and understanding of what is happening when we're breathing, what we want the body to do again, you know, what do we want the diaphragm to do? What do we want the abdominal wall to do or not to do? You know, you were saying about myths, right? The whole breathe with your belly, even though it's meant in a very, very good way. I understand what it's aiming at, but here there can be a lot of misunderstandings because, of course, our body will never breathe with our belly or breathe into your belly, even less, you know, our lungs will never be in our belly. So for some people, this can be very confusing because they will have very little understanding of anatomy or physiology. And when somebody tells them breathe into your stomach or breathe into your belly, they will desperately try, you know, to kind of use their abdominal muscles to kind of pump air into their belly. And yeah, that can't be a solution, right? Because then we're just building up, like if we're just building up weird patterns in the body that really make absolutely no sense.
Yeah.
So we kind of, as singing teachers, I think we have that kind of responsibility to at least have a understanding of also the kind of visualizations that we are using with our students of what that can do, you know. So breathe into your belly. We need to know what kind of students we can use that with and where it will be productive, and not use it as a cookie cutter kind of solution just for everybody, because that is what correct breathing is.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, yeah, correct breathing is. We have to get away from the whole right or wrong way of breathing. And we have to understand that there is a right way of breathing or an optimal, efficient way of breathing for everybody. And that doesn't mean that it's going to be this exactly the same kind of concept for the next person.
Right? Absolutely.
And we need to kind of understand enough about it so that we can make that, those differences and create functional patterns for all of our students.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, for example, let's take an example where that whole like breathe into your belly could be something good, could be something positive, is with a person. Let's, for example, take an athlete who has very strongly developed abs and is kind of holding their abs all the time. And so that means that there's just not enough space, not enough flexibility in the abdominal wall to kind of welcome the diaphragm on the inhale, welcome the diaphragm a little bit lower into the abdominal area. And there it can be a good thing, for example, to say like loosen up your belly and kind of like imagine that the air kind of moves your belly a little bit. that can make sense, right? But it definitely doesn't make sense with a person that doesn't have enough tone in the abdominal wall. And so it's anyway all a little bit kind of like, you know, floppy. And so to tell a person, breathe into your belly, that's going to just make them push all their organs that way. And that definitely will not bring what we need. And that what we need is a good flexibility, a good tone in all of those structures in order to keep the voice going, right?
You know, there's this whole thing about diaphragmatic breathing, and it's been, the diaphragm has been stressed so much in voice pedagogy. Can you give us a bit more insight as to what they mean when they say diaphragmatic breathing?
Yes. So diaphragmatic breathing is a little bit like an overemphasis on the diaphragm, because the diaphragm is always participating in respiratory motion. So the diaphragm is the most important muscle of respiration. It's the primary muscle, the most primary muscle of respiration that we have. So basically, we never not breathe with the diaphragm, okay? It's very, very difficult, almost impossible to breathe without the diaphragm being active. So let's try to find it, because it's sometimes when we ask people, where's your diaphragm? They're going to show somewhere here, or they're going to say here. But actually, the diaphragm is a muscle that is doing the entire circumference of our body, right? It is 360 degrees. So you can all do this with me and kind of try to feel where your diaphragm is, even though you won't feel your diaphragm. So we're going to kind of have a look and try to find the lower rim of our ribs right here. And we're going to follow that along. So you're going to kind of go down that cartilaginous part in the front. And then we're going to go further down. And here, you're probably going to feel two ribs on each side. They're poking out a little bit. Those are the floating ribs. And maybe as to how low those ribs come down to and how close they are to your pelvis. And so all of this, all of the lower rim of your rib cage, and even going around the back and on your spine, the lumbar part of your spine, is where your diaphragm attaches to your rib cage. Okay, so it really goes around and around, and it has vertical fibers. So it's not a muscle that sits there horizontally and kind of pushes out, but it's a muscle that when contracting, its muscles are going to come downward, and with this create more space in the rib cage and kind of pull air into the lungs. The diaphragm is being helped by the external intercostals. So for this, you can kind of like poke in between your ribs a little bit, and you feel that there's a little bit of space between the ribs. This space is filled with three layers of intercostal muscles, but the ones that are helping us inhale are the external intercostals. So they are basically pulling up our ribs, just like I'm moving my arms now, right? The ribs have little joints in the back with the spine, and the ribs are not opening up like this, because that's kind of impossible, because then they would detach from the sternum here every time we inhale. But what they do is they rise up on the inhale and they lower back down on the exhale. So we have this kind of movement. And it's when you hold your arms out like this and just inhale, your arms just automatically move the way that your ribs would be moving.
Wow. And so those of us who are listening and not seeing this, basically, Barbara's holding her palms together slightly and then just moving her elbows up and down to emulate what the rib cage is doing, correct?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Wow. So we want to really make sure that the ribs can move individually in their little joints and in their articulation. So what we don't want is to move the rib cage as a whole like this, with external muscles that would just recruit so many more muscles, and it would make it so much more energy intensive to raise the entire rib cage.
A lot of us do that. You know, a lot of us raise our shoulders up to our ears. You probably see this every day.
Yes.
It's a habit. And I think, like, I always call it the football player, you know, kind of pose, because it looks like we're padded up with shoulder pads, you know?
Yes.
And I suppose that's a very common holding pattern for a lot of us singers and performers, and especially when you're dealing with nerves.
Yes, very common. And this can, for example, if it becomes something chronic, you know, if we're always breathing like this and it becomes a pattern, it becomes an automatism, then this can turn into dysfunctional breathing, where our body, you know, just learn to breathe in a basically less functional way than what would be the natural way of breathing. And so here, for example, when there are those kind of patterns with over recruiting, overusing of the secondary muscles of respiration, there it can, for example, make sense to work with a breathing coach, to work with a breathing professional, to kind of at least try to find a more functional pattern, a muscular pattern of breathing, because it's going to not only help you with your singing, but it's going to also help you in just everyday life.
One quick question about dysfunctional breathing patterns. Where do you think they stem from? Do you think they're habitual, or do you think they're caused by certain vocal pathologies, or perhaps even stress or other things going on? Like, what could be the cause of that?
I would say all of the above.
That's what I thought.
And I would add, you know, dysfunctional breathing usually comes from a period, for example, of severe coughing. And, you know, and then we just, you know, we've been coughing, and that just creates a lot of strain in our breathing muscles. And then we just get used to that. You know, if you've been coughing for 2 weeks or for a month, just think of how many times you have repeated a certain pattern. And for our brain, it doesn't matter which pattern it is training. It doesn't make a difference between functional and dysfunctional patterns, right? It will just go into a pattern and then we repeat it and repeat it and repeat it, and then it becomes automatic, you know, after so many repetitions. So it can come from a disease that we had. It can come from, of course, instruction. You know, it can come from a concept that we are taught. Like, for example, I see a lot of people who have internalized and automatized the kind of really exaggerated movement of the abdominal wall. And it has become automatic, even though it does absolutely nothing for them. And then we have to retrain the body. Then, of course, another thing is stress. So another thing is just the nervous state that we are in. If we are constantly in like a sympathetic state, in this kind of fight or flight state, our breathing is going to be much more shallow. It's going to be very often much more connected to the secondary muscles of respiration. It's going to be connected to breathing through your mouth. And all of this creates breathing patterns that we might not even realize that we have, because, you know, we are always living in this body and we don't even realize the kind of patterns that we're taking on. So they can come, yes, from wherever. And sometimes we will understand where we got them from, and sometimes we won't. And I think it's really not about, you know, blaming somebody or judging ourselves or saying, whoa, I'm doing this wrong and it's bad. But it's much more about saying, oh, wow, interesting. This is what I'm doing. And now I'm realizing this. And then I can go, and every time I realize that I'm doing it, kind of override that and start to overwrite it as well.
Absolutely. Awareness is key. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to say, visually, just looking at your studio behind you, I see an amazing studio. I see pictures of anatomy, a huge picture of athletes, but then also a treadmill. And I'm just fascinated at, because I know that you not only work with vocal athletes, you work with Olympic athletes. Can you just tell us a tiny bit about what a session would look like with an athlete?
Okay, just like with a singer, we would go through a whole assessment. So this is where the whole manual therapy comes in. So I've been studying also like to become an actual manual therapist for the last 2 years. I have 1 year left. So it's really a manual assessment of trying to understand how flexible, how mobile the rib cage is, how, for example, how well the shoulders are moving, how much tension we hold in all of those muscles that are connecting our cervical spine to the ribs and to the sternum. So it's a lot about kind of trying to understand what's going on. And then I use the treadmill to kind of go more into the active exercising part. So we're going to do different tests, different, like just trying to figure out how long can a person exhale while walking? How long can a person exhale while running? What's happening? What kind of muscles is that person activating when running? And then with my singers, I put them on the treadmill for different reasons. Yes, also for a certain amount of like vocal stamina, but I also tend to put them on the treadmill when they are very nervous, when they are scared, when they have holding patterns in their voice. And the fact that the treadmill is moving all the time means that their brain cannot focus so much on other things, because the primary safety issue here is to not fall. And so sometimes things will just happen really nicely in their voice because they let go of the voice, of the fear. And so I put the singers on the treadmill as well.
Let's say that we need to do gigs that are more high impact and we want to improve our stamina for those gigs. Would you recommend a practice protocol of working on a treadmill and doing vocalization at the same time? And what would that look like?
I do. I think it's something that we can also adapt very well to our body, to our needs. You know, we don't need to run. A treadmill can also be used walking very, very slowly. So it's really more about like building that up. And here we're then also really touching on the physiology, the way that our body actually deals with the air and with the oxygen and with the CO2. So how tolerant are we to the CO2 in our body? When is our body giving us the kind of alarm bell that we have to breathe again, right? Like how long can we, for example, hold a note while we are moving, while our body is producing more and more CO2, how long can we hold a note? How can we practice that? How can we work on that? So that's really, really exciting and fascinating. And I think something that is going to still be researched a lot more in the future. We're really completely at the beginning of this right now.
This has been so great. Thank you so much for all you've taught us today about breathing. How can people get in touch with you if they've got questions? I know that you also provide sessions and courses. Can you tell us where to find you?
The easiest is probably Instagram. I'm on Instagram at BT Breathing. So just shoot me a message and we can set up a session or something. I do really like to work hands-on with people wherever this is possible, because of just my experience in really mobilizing the ribcage and really getting in there, into really the nitty-gritty of it. So we do also offer accommodation and everything here for people who come from abroad. So we love having people here with us in Slovenia and working in this wonderful natural setting that is surrounding us.
We will keep connecting on Instagram and hope to have you back on this. Thanks again, Barbara.
Yes, if anyone's interested in my balloon stuff, a lot of it is on Instagram on my reels, or at the time it was IGTV, I think.
And so your Instagram handle is?
BT Breathing.
BT Breathing. Okay, awesome. Thank you, Barbara. We will see you soon.
Thank you so much.